Welcome to the Gone Rogue podcast. My name is Kate. I don't normally introduce myself, and then I heard someone else do it on a podcast that I was listening to, and I was like, that's brilliant. I'm going to do that from now on. Here we are. I almost pulled the pin on recording this today. I'm pretty tired. I'm about to get my period. I'm having a shit time with my back. Training is very average right now, and I was just in one of those fucking moods. Plus, I have this annoying head cold. It's just like a cough when I wake up in the morning, but it's annoying. And you know when you're pissed off and you're just in one of those moods and you can just find all the reasons that life is shit? I'm like, I can find everything bad about my day already, and it's like, it's not even 11 a.m. I haven't considered anything good that's going on. But anyway, I wasn't going to do the podcast until I saw a video on TikTok that pissed me off. So I've gotten back on TikTok. I removed myself from TikTok because it's so dangerous. It's so easy to just lose track of time and be sucked into TikTok world. And I just was like, I don't really have a lot of self-control around this, so I'm just not going to use it. And I just avoided it. Then I decided, you know what, I should start using it. And it's kind of a nice channel to do some different things to what I do typically on Instagram. So I'm back on TikTok. And what I've done is I've gone and found TikTok content creators, people that talk about ideas, people that talk about strategy and that kind of thing. And one of the girls that I found was talking about her client who's had a lot of growth recently. And so I was like, oh, cool. I'll go and follow her, and I will go and just observe the way she's doing things and what content she's putting out and the way that it looks and the topics she's just talking about and see what happens. It's a girl called Anna. She talks about beauty and dating tips. And she essentially does these videos where she's sitting down putting her makeup on in the mirror and she's talking about some, like, it's very much like girl power and like fuck men. So some of them have been good and interesting, but a lot of them sound like a woman who's been burned. I think that she's had a lot of negative dating experiences, and that's the perspective that she's responding or telling these stories from. So I'm going to play this video for you. The question is, and I don't have the full question here, but you'll get the idea of it. It is, has a guy ever asked you for space break during a relationship? And if so, doesn't that basically mean it's breaking up with you? And she decides to answer this question. The caption on it says, let's talk about why I would never go back to a man who asked for space. I'm not going to say anymore. I'm going to let you listen to it.
Let's talk about why I would never go back to a man who asked for space and or tried to break up with me and then get back together with me afterwards. I want to preface this by saying that, yes, I do know couples that have broken up and gotten back together and are pretty happy from what I can tell. But here's the standard I set for myself one afternoon in my 20s when I heard this story from a guy I was dating at the time. Once upon a time, my ex-boyfriend told me he had a good friend from college, we'll call him Chad, who dated a girl for a few years and then decided to go to business school. Now, because his business school was all the way across the country, Chad decided that he didn't want to deal with having a long-distance girlfriend as he partied and slept his way through all the women at this business school that was all the way across the country. After 2 years of partying and sleeping his way through all the women at this business school that was all the way across the country, Chad graduated with an MBA and the feeling that maybe now he was ready for a committed relationship. And that maybe that girl from 2 years ago was actually the one. And guess what? She took him back. They got married. They have a kid now. And that's about all I know because Chad was my ex-boyfriend's friend and I don't talk to my ex-boyfriend anymore. But here's what I do know. Even in my desperate 20s, I knew that my love story with my husband was not going to start off with the fact that he thought I was disposable enough that he could leave and then come back to me after he had plowed through 2 years worth of women at business school.
Okay. I'm just going to stop her right there. A standard I set myself. I just feel like the whole video is her hanging shit on this other woman who got back together with an ex. Like, hanging shit so hard, so fucking hard. She's done an entire TikTok video about it. And she's super upset about the fact that they broke up and he went and slept with other people. Very upset about that. Even to the point where she says that it clearly means he believes that this woman he's broken up with is disposable, which I this is when I'm like, those are words that are pretty aggressive and may not apply to the situation at all. It sounds like they were super young. Like, if he's going to university, they're potentially not even fucking 20 years old yet. They decided to end things, which is a smart fucking move. And then when they were apart, he was sleeping with other people. Good chance she was too. I hate to break it to you. She was probably being the town's fucking bike as well, okay? But that was not mentioned. We don't know what she was doing. We kind of assume based on the way she's like written or visualized, played this out, that the chicks is just, she's just been disposed and she's just sitting at home waiting, just like, oh God, it's so lonely. But I highly doubt that. I just feel like maybe there's another side to the story. And then this is my stance. I'm going to, first of all, disregard the age thing. The age thing is a whole nother topic. But like in your 20s, I'm like, man, like you're 20. Like, so what? Don't fucking base your standards for your relationships on what other people who are in their early 20s are doing. That's insane. Base it on your own personal experience and base it on the people that you know and base it on who you are and who you fucking want to be. What kind of person do you want to be? But anyway, I think that if you are choosing a partner, you want someone who has world or life experience in all of its forms. That means traveling, studying, interesting jobs, interesting whatever, including sex. I want a guy who's had as many partners as possible. Like, the more experience, the better. Seriously. I want a guy who's fucking slept around. I want the biggest, this is why I'm with Greg, by the way. I want a guy who has slept with everybody, who has experience, who's tried a lot of things, who's had a lot of feedback from different people, who's had partners in the past that consistently want to keep sleeping with them. Like, that's a fucking great sign. Someone that has been consistently sleeping with multiple different people, had lots of casual relationships, has been in some short term, has been in some long term. Like, you want to be with someone who has been out in the world figuring their shit out. Because if they haven't, if they come to you and they haven't, it will be this experience of always wondering if the grass is greener. That's kind of part one. Part two is that if they don't have any experience, you're going to be their fucking experience. And that's potentially limiting your sex life, right? Like, you want people to bring things to the table. You don't want like some fresh Prince Charming that hasn't touched another woman's body. Like, fuck no. Abso-fucking-lutely not. God damn, that sounds like my worst fucking nightmare. So the whole thing where she's like, this guy was for 2 years sleeping with other women, sleeping through the whole school. I'm like, great. That's awesome. Do you know what? Here's the other side of the story. I reckon the chick that was with him before business school was like, babe, we should break up. I think you should go out and experience the world. Go and have some fun. Like, go and experiment. Go have some fun with some other pussies. Like, seriously, babe, just do it. I think it'll be great. Go see what happens. Go out into the world. She encouraged him to go because he probably wasn't that interesting in bed. She's like, also, while you're gone, that means I can go and do whatever the fuck I want to do. Because assuming they're monogamous, they were only sleeping with each other. This is the problem with monogamy, people. So she's like, go, baby, go. And then in the meantime, she's doing whatever she wants to do. And then he comes back and here's the other thing that's really cool. He's like, hey, I've spent 2 years sleeping with everyone I can, sleeping my way through business school, and I want to be with you. Holy fuck, right? When someone has been with so many people and had experiences and connections and relationships with so many people, and yet they want you, that is so powerful. That is incredible. If you want to be fucking validated and you want to feel special and you want a fucking love story, that's it. That's the love story. Let your partner go out into the world and do whatever the fuck they want to do. And if they come back for you, that is amazing. That is a feeling you cannot beat if you understand it. So giving them the freedom and letting them choose and having them come back and choose you is like, it's not the same as being with a guy who just, that's it. He's just like, he's, this is the love story. And your standard is that he, like, you guys just, it has to be you and only you. And if he touches anyone out, like, I just feel like that's such an insecure perspective, and such a, like, it's such a limiting way to live as well. And I know that I'm biased because I'm not a monogamist and I have another experience, but I just, the whole thing of like, how dare he sleep with other people and then come and take you back? I'm like, no, that we've got it wrong. Like all the stories of like a guy coming crawling back, I just think it's such a shitty way to paint men, like such a shitty way. And yes, we all make mistakes. Like there are men and women out there who have fucked this up and they have been shitty human beings. But I also think that there's a lot of people that have left relationships, decided to go their own ways. And in the journey of figuring out like how to find their feet and doing it on their own and meeting other people and going through that, they've realize what they had and that what they had was better than anything else out there. And only in doing that can they really fully appreciate, you know, what that human being was to them and what they gave them. And it's something that Greg and I experience all the time in being open. We constantly have these like waves of appreciation and gratitude whenever we go on dates with other people or hook up with other people, because I'm like, oh God, like you're so good. You're so amazing. Other people are just, they just don't cut it. And it's a really cool experience. And I just think that if more people could understand that when you let someone be with other people, see other people, experience connecting with other people in whatever that may look like, it might just be friends. It doesn't necessarily mean you're non-monogamous. But when you allow people to go and be themselves and be their own person and connect and do what they do, and they still want to be with you, I think that that is a stronger, and I don't want to say it's a stronger version of love because love is just fucking love, but I think it's a more secure version, which sounds strange, doesn't it? Because if you're seeing other people and you're inviting your partner to go and do whatever they want to do, or you're saying like, I want a partner who's been around the block, it's like, that sounds strange. It seems like, you know, they're a slut. Like, oh God, you don't want to be with a man like that. Oh my gosh. But it's like, no. Like that actually will give you more security because you know that they know what's out there. They know exactly what's out there and they want you. And I think that's fucking cool. Okay. That's my rant. So I have a bunch of questions that I'm going to go through. Bunch of questions that were sent to me on Instagram. I actually discussed a couple with Greg last night, but let me jump on and see what we've got. So we had some really good ones and we had a lot around like low libido and how to deal with people with different sex drives. So I will talk about that because I seem to be getting a lot of questions like that. We had a couple other questions around our relationship and kids, which I feel like we've talked about a couple of times. I probably just need to do an entire episode on it so that I can be like, here you go, go and listen to this. And then we had some questions around like dating, which I thought were quite good. So I might start with that one actually. First of all, we had a question saying, how's the dating life going for both myself and MDM or Greg or Wolfie? He's also Wolfie. So it's been fucking dead, to be totally honest. Greg's been super busy with work. He's pretty flat out. There's a new project that he's working on and I just don't even think he's talking to people, let alone like considering dating or hooking up with people. And we haven't been doing any group stuff recently just because one, I've actually been away. Then we were in Thailand. It's just been busier. Like seminars has made my life a little busier and I'm not around as much, or at least not things like weekends as much. So that makes things harder. And then, with his work, it's just like, you know, I think work kind of spills over a little bit or just takes priority at times. So it's been kind of a little bit dead. I did have a date, would have been before I went to New Zealand. It was a guy that I met at OSS. We've hooked up a couple of times now. And it was okay. I have feedback for him because the sex was like, There's so many little things that I feel like sometimes with sex, I'm like, I just can't really give you all of this feedback right now. That's the one thing about casual sex. When you're in a relationship, you have opportunities to talk about the sex outside of having sex, like in the moment. And that's when you can kind of ask things or ask questions or find out where somebody got that habit or thing from. And then also make requests. So this guy, I like my one piece of feedback for him is to fucking use lube. Like Jesus Christ. And the only way I can explain it, and I haven't explained it to him yet, but the way that I'm going to do it if we see each other again is be like, look, imagine me giving you a hand job without lube. And this guy's uncut, without lube or spit. Okay. It wouldn't be fucking nice. Like I'm getting friction burn. Jesus Christ. And I think what he thinks is if he licks like the tips of his fingers or puts a little spit on it, like the end of his cock, he's like, oh, you're all good. I'm like, no, buddy. No, like I am internally, there is moisture. It's actually not internal. It's actually like, if you're going to use lube, you need to put it fucking all over my vagina, all over my, let's use the anatomically correct words, all over my vulva and around the opening and surrounding areas. And then around the base of your cock, because that's where it's fucking rubbing and is not comfortable. Like unless you have some fucking porn star pristine pussy, which 99.9% of women don't, there are lips and that skin needs to be moist. So please, dear Lord, use lube with fingers and with penises. I just don't know why people don't. I BYO my own lube whenever I go on dates. Literally, I have a little bottle of lube and I always bring it up and I just get it out. I'm like, hey, just fucking give me your dick or give me your hand or I'll just put it on myself. I usually just put it on myself. I'm like, I just don't like playing without it. And it's not like, you know, I don't think there's a whole thing of like, oh, but you're not wet and that's a bad sign. Like, no, like that's not the case. Lube just makes things better, man. It makes things better. Like I said, this guy's uncut. If I were to give him a fucking hand job or something without spit, it wouldn't be fun. Like it just wouldn't. So same vibes on the way back. And then the other thing is, so anal, and we're going to talk about anal a little bit because I had someone ask about anal, but I feel like I just need to do an entire episode on anal because it's something that just, I want to talk about. I just want to talk about it. But this guy was like, do you like anal? And I'm like, yeah, I like anal. And then he was using his fingers and again, without using fucking lube. I'm like, everybody at least knows to use lube in your asshole, right? I feel like that's the number. I had to ask him to get lube. I was like, dude, the fuck? And like, this guy is someone who has been to OSS, which is a swingers club, multiple times. So my standard of what I expect people to understand or have experienced that are going to those clubs is actually not really where it is. But I just assume because they're in that scene that they are experienced and kind of know their shit and are educated. But I just was like, ah, God, come on. And so I kind of gave him shit about that. And then, yeah, he'd kind of mentioned like, we had said something in a way where he was like, how about this? Can you imagine saying that during sex? How about this? And then tried to put his cock in my ass, straight in. He'd put like the end of his thumb in my ass and then was like, I'm going to put my cock in her ass. Like, I'm just going to do this. And I was like, hey, no, 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 no. That's not how you warm up a butthole for anal. So that's my other piece of feedback for him. I'm like, hey, the way you're trying to go about this butt play thing is all kinds of wrong. And I don't like it. I don't appreciate it. And I'm someone that really needs very little prep for anal. Like I'm not worried about like poop stuff. I'm not worried about like anything really. I just don't really give enough of a fuck. Plus I don't feel like I need to do a ton of prep, but even then I was like, hey buddy, like it's just so much more enjoyable for me when it's when there's been this warm up process where like you kind of build up in size and build up in what you're fucking putting in the butt and then you can transition to anal, but anal is not the starting point. So that's my other piece of feedback from this guy. Fucking hell. I honestly, you know, it's like the one place that I don't want to be a coach. In the bedroom, I'm like, God damn it. I'm going to have to coach him. Fuck. So I it can be very distracting, like when things aren't going well and I'm like, I really want to give him feedback. But then there's often too many things going wrong and I'm like, so I'll just tell him to move on. I'll just be like, hey, let's just do this. Okay. So that's the dating life right now. That's me recently. I don't think Greg's really hooked up with anyone recently. He had a couple of girls that he was sort of like casually seeing in Newcastle, but yeah, nothing recently. And then we had a question from someone about their dating life. And the question was, let me find it. Okay. How to balance casual dating while also looking for a partner, having a hard time doing both. And it's kind of a hard question to answer without knowing exactly what is hard about it. Is it the energy that you're putting in? Is it your time? Is your time limited? Is it something else? Is it the type of person you're looking for? Are they really different? Because I kind of read this question and was like, oh, that's interesting. The way that I date and the way that I date for a long-term relationship are not very different to one another. The only thing that really changes is when I'm dating casually, I may accept things about someone that I perhaps wouldn't tolerate if I were dating them in a relationship, like in something where I was looking to be establishing a long-term connection. So the only thing that would happen with casual dating is it's almost like the pool of people that I'm potentially interested in is larger. With someone that is someone I'm looking to be in a relationship with, that pool of people is smaller. But the way that I date is fairly consistent. It's kind of the same. And what is a little bit different for me is that the way that I date casually is not super casual, purely because I need some kind of connection with someone. And the reason for that is I want to feel really comfortable with someone before I have sex because it allows me to be more vulnerable. It allows me to open up. It allows me to communicate, do the things like give feedback. It allows me to ask questions. It allows me to just kind of be really relaxed and actually be present and enjoy it. If I'm not sure about the person, if I feel uncomfortable, if I feel nervous or shy, I cannot enjoy myself. Like I can't get into it. So for me, it totally makes sense purely on the sex part where I'm like, if I know the person a little bit, the sex is way better. So I just spend time going on a coffee date or just chatting to them for a while, meeting them before I actually hook up with them, just to establish that connection and see if I can chat with them easily, see if they're open to talking about sex, see what they're kind of like to talk with. And if there's anything that they're awkward or not comfortable on or even like take the piss out of, like some people have been really uncomfortable talking about sex, I'm like, okay, like we're probably not going to have a lot of fun sleeping together, or at least I'm not going to, because it's hard to talk to you about this stuff. So that's kind of my experience. My casual dating is not too dissimilar from my long-term dating. I still have the same kind of interesting conversations with people if I can. That's the goal. I always like to have interesting conversations, ask interesting questions, find out about what they're like as a person, what they're into, da-da-da. However, if you're saying this in terms of time and energy, if you're putting in a lot of time to getting to know somebody, like I said, if you're going on coffee dates with people, if you're trying to like hang out with them, if you're trying to go on dates consecutively over, you know, a couple of weeks to get to know someone, to get excited, like you get excited about them, you invest in them, there's this kind of build-up process, that can take up a lot of time and energy. And that can mean that you potentially aren't going to have time for casual partners. And in the same way, the flip side of this is if you have some casual partners that you're seeing consistently, that can often suck up the one or two or three nights a week that you have available to go on dates and meet people, or even to just like engage in conversation online with people if you're dating online. If you're casually dating people, that can often kind of fill your bucket to a degree and make you kind of not aware of what you're missing and what you're actually looking for. So you might need to be clear on which one is it? If you're doing something where it's removing energy and time from one, I guess, one option because you're choosing in the other option, but what you really want is the first option, then you probably need to dedicate more time to, if it's long, like if you're looking for a long-term relationship, then dedicating more time to establishing a long-term relationship. And if you want more casual dating, then dedicating more time to casual dating, but your time will have to be split somewhere. So what you might have to decide is like, where is that line? Where do I split it? And you might need to just take a break from one or the other in order to make that happen in amongst, you know, our busy lives. And then the other thing that Greg said when we sort of were talking about it last night is he was like, it just seems like you're trying to put labels on people. Like, you're looking for a casual partner and a long-term partner. But the reality is that a lot of relationships come out of or ultimately end up being both, because a relationship will start casual and then develop into something more serious. Like, you could casually date for 6 months and then become serious, and then that's a long-term relationship. Like, there's no... like, it has to be that you meet someone and from the get-go, you know that you're going to be in a long-term relationship and that's what you're both investing in. That's just not really the reality. I think a lot of people come into relationships not being sure what they want with that person. And it's not until later down the track that they figure it out. In the same way that you could end up writing someone off if they're like, ah, I just want something casual. And you're like, oh, well, I'm looking for a long-term relationship and I'm not going to waste my time with you. And it's like, that could be someone that could have been a really cool connection. So I think you almost need to remove these labels of like, I'm seeking someone for X and I'm seeking someone for Y. And you just need to go about making interesting connections with people and pursuing the connections that interest you most. And that is actually what I decided to do when I met Greg. I even said it to him. I was like, hey, I'm really interested in this connection and I'd love to see like where it goes. And it was just like, I'm interested in interesting connections. And so I'm just going to let them guide me. I'm going to try to meet as many people as I can in a manner that suits me, my time, my energy. And then whatever ones stand out for me, I'll go down that path for a while. And there may be two or three at one time, or in the case of Greg, like it kind of became one person because I was like, oh, this is a really interesting connection. And there was a point right at the beginning where I was like, oh, I don't even know what I want out of this. Like, I'm not really sure. Maybe I just want it to be casual. I don't know. Maybe I want it to be friends. Like, I had a moment of like, is it a friend thing? Like, I don't know. And I just was like, you know what? Fuck it. Fuck the labels. I actually don't need to find a definition for what this is. I don't need it. All I know is that this is an interesting connection for me right now. I really enjoy having conversations with this guy and I'm just going to keep doing that. And if he's open and he's got time, cool. We can make that work. And that was all I needed. And then even as our relationship developed and the conversation about the relationship started to happen, even then we decided to pull back on labels because we were like, well, are we non-monogamous? Are we polyamorous? What are we? What else did we say? There were a couple other things where it was like, I think we were even discussing like, are we actually monogamous? Like what are we? And we just kind of decided that it didn't really matter. Like the label was, we were getting kind of hung up on like defining what it was and it really didn't matter. It was more about like, hey, to what degree are you invested and to what degree am I invested and are we on the same page? And if we are, then cool. Like the label is very irrelevant, really, as long as we both know what we're like, what almost like what page each other is on, or being on the same page, I guess. And that was super valuable for me, just like letting myself get rid of the label of like, what kind of relationship is this? What am I looking for? What I kind of knew what I wanted, and it was to just have good connections with people, and that was perfect. It was enough for me to not feel like I needed to have the, what are we a relationship? Like I wrote our relationship, what are we conversation? And I think it's a really nice, relaxing approach to dating that will make life just a lot more enjoyable. And you don't need to worry about categorizing people into, are they casual? Are they more serious? Because you just assess the connection. And is it a connection that you enjoy or is it a connection that you don't really enjoy? And if it's, you know, a moderate enjoyment, maybe that's someone that you see every now and again. If it's high enjoyment, maybe you see that person more often. And I think that's maybe all you need. Okay. I had a question asking, oh, okay, I'll do this one. Have you thought about getting married / kids? How have you looked to transition from E&M? And I'm assuming transitioning from E&M would be like a, well, if you're thinking about getting married and having kids, like how does closing up look like, assuming that we would be monogamous if we did those things? We won't be monogamous. I don't think we'll, and I can't say never, but I have no desire to be monogamous. Funnily enough, I feel quite monogamous. Like I feel, especially emotionally, like I am emotionally very invested and committed to this relationship. And I don't feel like any of that is taken away by being non-monogamous. I'm super committed to this and I date pretty irregularly. So even then it's like, you know, I have a date every now and again. And in the times in between every date, it's like, I forget that we're non-monogamous almost, except for I might be like flirting with people online, but yeah, it feels super monogamous. So funnily enough, it's one of those things where it's just a label almost, you know, it's like we're together, like we're more together than I've ever been with a partner. But we just happen to like talk to other people and we both know about it. And then we will go and randomly hook up with other people or whatever. So there's no point at which I really see us not being non-monogamous. And if anything, having children or getting married to me almost, and I haven't done it before, so I don't know, but it almost expresses the need to have things outside of the relationship more. And that doesn't necessarily have to mean that you're dating or sleeping with other people. That could be other things. It could just be activities, passions, interests, whatever. But it certainly, for me, feels like if you're having children or you're married, it becomes more important that you establish some autonomy and some independence, or interdependence, I guess you can say, so that you avoid being codependent and that relationship being kind of your whole entire world. I think it's so important that you maintain your own identity and your own thing. And non-monogamy is a really good way to do that, because when I go on dates and when I'm talking to other people, especially solo dates, obviously, it's something that's just for me. It's not for Greg. Greg's not there. He's not involved. He doesn't pick who I go on dates with. I pick who I go on dates with. I'm talking to them. I organize it. I go out of the house and I go on this date and interact with these people and have these little connections and little relationships with these people. And that's a really nice feeling. Like I'm on my own doing that thing. And I think it's a really nice way in a relationship to, yeah, have your own little world and have your own life kind of going on at the same time that you're really invested in the life that you're building together. I think that a relationship should really be two individuals coming together to cultivate the relationship, but it's still two people. It's not like we're us, you're my other half, you've completed me. It's not that. It's I'm complete on my own. You are also complete on your own. We're our own fucking people. And we come together and we create this thing together, but it doesn't take over our lives. It's just one aspect of our lives. So yeah, I think, you know, being married and having kids, I think it's more important to find those things that allows you to have your own life and have your own things. And I honestly think that dating will be super fun then, especially because at the stage that, you know, potentially in 10 years, we'll have kids and we'll be 10, 12 years deep into our relationship. And I think that having the ability to see other people is going to keep the spark. And I don't mean spark as in sexual spark. I mean, just keep it interesting. There's a variety and there's challenges and there's different things. And, you know, just dating on its own is based around this idea of like, you're finding people that you desire. And when you experience desire like that, it kind of engages you in that sensation. And I think it encourages it, you know, it's fuel for fire. And when we shut down our desire, it's hard to control where the desire is directed to. So it's like, hey, I've got all this desire and it just goes in any direction that it wants to. And when I'm single, I just let it go wherever. But when I get into a monogamous relationship, I have to shut down parts of that desire. But it's really hard. Even the little amount of desire that I'm trying to continue to allow, even that, I can't really control where it goes. It's really hard to put it into a room and just be like, stay. Desire is not something that we can really do what we want with. It just is this experience that we have. It's like breathing to a degree. So to shut down desire in a monogamous relationship can often feel like you're shutting down all desire. And when we don't do that, when we're non-monogamous and we allow ourselves to have desire for other people, we talk about it, we engage with it, we do whatever we want essentially with it within the agreements of our relationship, it helps to encourage desire everywhere. It's not just desire for other people. It also ends up being desire for each other. So when I think of like married kids, I'm thinking like, oh God, okay, we're looking at, you know, decades of being together. That is when I want to feel desire, and that's when I want the excitement. And I think that dating other people, sleeping with other people is a really good way to do that. The only time that I think we would ever close is if I'm fucking like in the depths of pregnancy. Even then, I've had friends that have hooked up with pregnant women, and I'm like, well, hey, maybe that'll be me at some point. Okay. We did have another question that was about the rules of the relationship. So where is it? Let me find. Okay. Do you alter the rules to your open relationship as you come across issues? Would love to hear how it's evolved. The first thing with this question is we differentiate between the term rules and the term agreements. And then you can even say there's a third category, which is boundaries. Boundaries are what I use to protect myself. I enforce my own boundaries, and they can influence the agreements that we have, that we've decided on together. The rules are set in stone. The rules are these concrete things that are very rigid, that are based on something that protects both of us in terms of safety and needs, and are probably not really up for negotiation. There are also things that are informed by what our boundaries are. So one of our rules is that we always use protection with other partners for penetrative sex. We always use condoms with other people, essentially. And then the other rule is we always talk about it. We have an open book format relationship where we discuss who we're talking to, when we're going on a date, who it is, any details that we feel are necessary. We have check-ins before we go on date or whatever. We check in afterwards. We have a lot of open communication about the whole process. That's been the way it's been from the beginning. We've never at any point had like a don't ask, don't tell thing. There's never been anything where we can't ask questions or, you know, none of that. It's always just been like, hey, this is open communication. You can ask any question you want, and you can give as much information as is appropriate, as long as, you know, we're respecting people's privacy and stuff like that. And then also the other thing that we've actually kind of figured out is sometimes the questions that we're asking are coming from a place of just insecurities, and we actually don't need the answer. So just figuring out like what questions we actually need to ask has been a fun little process. But some of the things that we have added in, they've really come about since we've lived together. We obviously were not living together until we moved to Newcastle at Christmas. Prior to that, we had been living apart in our own houses on our own as well. So it meant that the non-monogamy thing was really easy. We both had our own places. No housemates, no family. Like it was perfect. Now that we're living together, it's a little bit different. And what we've kind of adjusted was one of the things that we did. I actually talked about this in the podcast. Greg had a date and I had a date. And it was the first time that I was hooking up with a couple on my own. And it was the first time that Greg was bringing someone back to our place. And silly us, we're like, oh, we can totally do this on the same night. Like, you're occupied, I'll just organize a date. Perfect. And so Greg organized a date, and he had asked me multiple times, like, are you sure this is okay? Are you sure this is okay? Are you sure this is okay? And I'm like, yeah, like it's fine. Like, I don't, you know, I even said, I don't think I can say no, which was stupid. I think that's the sign that you need to say no. I actually had a really good time, and he had a good time. It was the reconnection afterwards that was really hard. What happened was, because it was my first time hooking up with a couple, I just wanted to, one, kind of just be able to focus on that, but also two, not have to like figure out when I could go home. I just wanted to be able to like come home when I was done. So I finished with this couple and immediately was like thinking about like, Greg's with someone at our house. I don't know. Like I meant to text him to tell him I'm coming home. And so, or like call him. And I called him and he didn't answer. And that was the first bad thing. I was like, fuck, he hasn't answered me. And I immediately am like, they're having sex. Okay, cool. I text him and I get no response. And then I call him again and he answers. And this has happened kind of over a period of like 10 minutes while I've kind of been like hanging around with my friends that I'd been playing with and trying to fill in time. And then I make my way home and Greg's like, okay, cool. Like Kat will be, I can't remember what her name is, whatever her name is, will be gone. But then what happened was, I think he asked me if I wanted to meet her. We'd discussed me meeting her before she, like before I left, she was going to be there and I was going to meet her. And I was like, I was ready for that. I wanted that to happen. It would have been nice because I tend to have the experience of if I haven't met someone, it's way worse in my brain. When I meet someone, I'm like, oh, okay. Like I can relax. It's just a fucking human being. It's cool. But then she was late and I needed to go. So it was kind of like this just like rushed, flustered thing where I was like, I can't wait. Like I need to go. And it wasn't a great feeling. And I just went to this date anyway. Then I was coming home and it was just like knowing that they'd been having sex in our bed, especially when I was like, I just want to focus on my day. Like I've just done this thing I've never done before and I just want to be happy and excited about that. And now I'm like really distracted and it's really shitty. So it was like just this blend of emotions and I wanted to be this, but I felt like I couldn't. So I was pissed off about that. And then it was also just uncomfortable. And I was very hung up on this idea that I didn't have my own space. Like in my house, I was like, I can't just be in my room. Like this is where it happened and I feel uncomfortable here. And it was, there was one point where I walked out and I was just like, I can't, like, this is actually too much. I'm just going to leave this particular room and just go somewhere else. Like this is overwhelming. And then just a few other things where like I found out some details about what they were talking about and what they were doing. And I was like, this is not very fun to hear. This is really hard. I am not processing this well. So that night was kind of a, it's not a milestone. It was just a turning point where we were like, okay, let's maybe not do dates on the same night, especially not first time dates, where it was the first time where Greg was having someone over. It was the first time I was having a play session with a couple. We were like, we're not going to do first times on the same night. And then the second thing that came out of that was no people at the house, which I didn't really feel comfortable with because I just, it was kind of unrealistic and I was aware of that. And I was also aware that it, for some reason, is much easier for me to find guys who have houses on their own, who like have their own place, whatever, have the ability to host. Harder to find girls that do that, like the girls that live alone, that don't have housemates, aren't with family, whatever. I just realized that it was going to be really hard for Greg to actually be able to go somewhere. So then he was like, no, it's cool. Like I'll just pay for a hotel. And then I have a weird thing with like paying for a hotel. I'm like, I think that's fucking worse. Like, I don't want you to buy a hotel. Like one, it's super inconvenient for you. You're like shelling out money. And I also have a weird thing when he's like spending a whole lot of money on someone else, which is just a me thing. Like I let go of that and I don't worry about it. I've done it on other dates. Like it's fine, but it's for some reason I get like this weird thing about like, oh, like you're splurging, you're taking this girl out to a hotel and it's this whole thing. And so I'm weird about it. But anyway, I was like, oh, look, it's just not fair. Like it's kind of ridiculous. And how do we find a middle ground? So one of the rules, or not a rule really, this is an agreement. One of the agreements that evolved out of that, aside from let's not do first things on the same night, was no sex in our bed, but you can have sex in our house, in the spare room, on the spare bed. We're lucky we happen to have a spare room that has another bed in it. So that's what we've done from that point onwards. There's been a couple of cases where we have ended up using hotels still, and that's fine. Like, it's just the fucking, like, you know, it's a Holiday Inn Express. It's a brand new one, so it's nice, but it's like, it's just a Holiday Inn Express. It's not a big deal, but I still have a weird thing about it. I don't know why. I think I have a bit of a like almost picture in my brain of guys like taking girls out to hotels and it being an extravagant, like night and a big date and a big thing. And so hotels to me seem to have a lot of meaning. Like as a girl, it's like, ooh, like I'm being taken to a hotel, even though it's a shitty hotel and it's just a fuck. But I seem to have this little bit of, yeah, it's almost just like it has meaning for me, and I'm doing my best to let it go and know that that's not what it necessarily means, and that we, you know, have different meanings for it now. But I'm just slowly learning that by practicing it, by doing it, and it's getting better. But yeah, it's really funny. I had this little weird thing where I'm like, ah, it's really strange for you to spend like large portions of money on other people, other women specifically. So yeah, anyway. And he's like, oh, it's funny because for him, it's almost like a cheap thing where they become extra, kind of like become really slutty. Like it's like they're willing to come to a hotel, like just a cheap hotel, and like just hook up, and then he leaves. So it's like we have totally different perspectives on it, or not perspectives, just it has different meaning, which is funny. So it's been interesting to just understand his stance and to realize that we have totally different views on it. Okay, so that's one of the things that's changed. And then another rule, or it's kind of a rule, kind of not a rule. It's just something that I'm playing with at the moment. I'm only sleeping with people when I'm infertile. So I'll sleep with Greg when I'm in my fertile window, but I will not sleep with other people when I'm in my fertile window. So that means from day 11 to day 21, I will only be sleeping with Greg. The reason for that is that we actually went to OSS. The second time we went, it was like fucking bang on the day that I ovulated, and I just started freaking out. And I knew that it was going to be pretty safe. Like, you know, one, I only slept with Greg and one other dude, like in terms of penetration. I used a condom with the other guy the whole time. Like, but as you do, I freaked out still. And then my period, of course, just because the universe wanted to fucking teach me a lesson, my period was late the following month. So it was like 4 or 5 days late. Like it was a strange one that just happened to be that month. So I was just stressed to the max and freaking out. And essentially, like, you know, I've fallen pregnant with Greg before and had this moment of like just terrified and awful and like, what the fuck? And you know, kind of just, it's not a nice feeling. And to be in that position again, where we both were like, fuck, well, like, maybe I am pregnant. And Greg had said after I had the abortion 2021, he was like, we're not doing this again. We're not having another abortion. I'm not going to do it. Cause it was pretty awful. Like it was, and you know, like I think back on it, I'm like, oh, it was just like, imagine your worst hangover and your worst period combined. Like it was like, ugh, you just feel sick for a few hours and then you're fine. Like then you're totally okay. And the days around it, either side of it, were totally fine. But it was just, Greg's never seen me like that before. And I think he was just mortified. And so he kind of said like, hey, I'm not gonna do this again. So when I had a late period, he kind of had this, like, we both were like, fuck, I could be pregnant. And he was kind of almost excited, like, well, we're not having another abortion, so this could be we're pregnant. And my brain immediately goes, I would need to find out who the father is. I would need to do a test. And so I shared that with him and he was like, oh, fuck, right. Okay, cool. And then it just made the whole thing awful. Like the whole idea that I could be pregnant for the 2 or 3 days that we, you know, that it was a possibility. It was just stressful and shitty and not fun. And so as much as I think the risk of falling pregnant when you're using protection and you're being really smart during your fertile window is low, the idea of accidentally getting pregnant and finding out that you're pregnant and for your immediate, like your first reaction to be, fuck, who's the father, or to feel anything bad at all is not how I want to find out that I'm pregnant. Like that was a shitty, shitty week. And for that to be how I found out that I was pregnant, I'm like, I'm not willing to do that. Like it's not a price that I'm willing to pay. So presently I am not sleeping with people when I'm in my fertile window. It has been a little bit difficult. And the reason for that is, it's funny because I do my best not to like scoreboard. You might have heard the phrase or term scoreboarding or keeping score in a relationship. And it might be like you keep score of how many times you do the dishes. You keep score of who's fucking changed the toilet paper and who hasn't, or who did the laundry, or like oftentimes it's like jobs around the house, right? And what you can often find is where it's uneven. And then you get mad about that. You become resentful because you're doing X, Y, Z so many times, the other person isn't doing the equivalent work. And so you feel like the workload is unfair, even though they could be doing other jobs that you don't do. And what's typical is like, you know, a female might do dishes and laundry, but the male will often be doing things like the lawn mowing and putting the bins out. So it will even up, but we just tend to focus on like this tit for tat, right? So it's a dangerous game to play to keep score. And it's really easy to do in non-monogamy because I can keep score of how many dates I've been on versus how many dates he's been on. I can keep score of how many people I've slept with. I can keep score of how many people he's slept with, which it's like, it's a really unhealthy competition, but I am a competitive person. So I'm hyper aware of it and I'm really careful that I don't do that. And I immediately recognize when I am doing it. So like, and I talk to Greg about it a lot, but I tend to find that because I'm so limited in when I can sleep with people, it can be a little bit of a negative impact overall. Like I can feel a bit shit about myself because I can't sleep with people. Greg gets to sleep with more people. He has more opportunity. And then the other side of the argument is it's not like Greg isn't sleeping with someone when they're fertile. So it's not equivalent, right? Like Greg could still potentially, and the risk is still low, right? It's still condoms. It's still low, but the risk is still the same for him to get someone else pregnant. And he is not abiding by a similar rule to me, which would be fucking hard. You know, it's like how many women know their fertile window? Like it would be great. It would make life a lot easier, but it would be an impossible thing to like actually implement where it's like, hey, you can only sleep with women when they're not fertile. And I'm only going to sleep with guys when I'm not fertile. So it's really something that I've brought in from my own peace of mind. So yeah, that's an interesting one. That's probably still being figured out a little bit to a degree. And you know, it is when I'm having an issue with like Greg seeing a lot of people and not even like that many people, fuck's sake. But when he's seeing more people than me and I'm like, this is really sad. I wish that I could. And I already tend to find that I see less people because I'm much more picky than him. And it's not to say that he picks bad people and is just sleeping with anybody, but I am really particular and I have a process that gets rid of a lot of people. So it's just a different dance. We're just doing a different dance. So those are some of the things that have evolved. Something about our relationship is we avoided labels early on. We have also deliberately avoided rules. And the reason for that is, like I said, rules are very rigid. And they're often brought in when someone feels unsafe. So the rules are a way to measure security to a degree, right? Like, I don't like it when you see someone two times in a row because you have more chance of falling in love with them. This is an actual rule from a friend of mine. They had a rule of no twice in a row. You couldn't see the same person twice in a row. You could see them twice, just not one date after another. You had to see someone else in between them. And it was a way to avoid being around them too much and potentially beginning to catch feelings. And to me, it's a rule that on the surface might seem to make sense. Like, oh yeah, you won't catch feelings if you don't see them twice in a row. But it is also total bullshit. It's not going to stop anyone from catching feelings. Sorry. And also is put in place as almost a way to say, hey, we have this rule now. So now my conscience can let go of all my insecurities. I feel safe. I feel protected by this rule and I no longer have to talk about it. It's almost like a band-aid solution, if that makes sense. So if I don't have a rule, then I have to deal with this with all of my insecurities and all of my potentially negative emotions and all the experiences that come up for me at the same time that we have to continually talk about it. And so that's kind of the route that we decided to go. We were like, let's not put in hard rules whenever we freak out about something. So for example, the like no sex at our house thing, it was really easy for us to be like, hey, let's just make this a rule. But it was like a, even that is, I think it's, it doesn't make sense. Like it doesn't make, it's not practical really. Like, I mean, we're very practical people. So for us, it's like, that's just, it's not even logical. Let's just do something that makes sense at least. And works out for both of us. You know, it's a win-win situation where I don't feel like when I get home or if Greg's had a date and I haven't been there and I come back, I don't feel like I don't have space. And let's also make sure that it's not impossible for Greg to hook up with people. Like he can just bring them to our house. So we found something that works for both of us. But if we had said, hey, just no people at the house. And like, let me tell you, Greg wanted to do that. Greg is the kind of person who's like, I hate this. I'm not happy with how you're feeling. It makes me feel like shit. Let's just make a rule. Like, let's just not have people come over to the house. But it was just a knee-jerk reaction to the fear, to feeling scared, to the pain, to whatever we were struggling with at the time. So what we decided is, no, instead of being in the position of like, I really want to just make a rule. Let's just not ever do this again. Let's just not ever do it that way again. Let's just not ever do this thing. Cause it's just like, you're going to end up with fucking thousands of rules. Cause there's so many moments that you struggle in this thing and in a monogamous or non-monogamous relationship. So we said, let's just have the conversation every time it comes up. Let's just decide based on where we are in that moment. We'll just fucking talk about it. We're not going to put in a rule. We're just going to talk about it as it comes up. So it's the whole like, well, you know, do you have a rule that you can't fall in love with other people or you can't go on X number of dates or you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do those things? We don't have any of those rules because if something like that comes up, if you start to get feelings for someone, if you want to have a sleepover with someone, for example, we haven't had a sleepover with anybody else yet. I'm totally open to it. Greg, it has a lot more meaning to him than it does for me. So it's something that has been something we have discussed like as we've gone. And it will be something that we'll continue to discuss, especially if it actually comes up as something that one of us wants to do. But we don't have a rule because it's something that we're just going to discuss. So when it comes up, when it's appropriate, figure out where each person is, give the other person an opportunity to actually work with it, to work through it, to process it, to figure out, you know, how they feel about it, why they feel that way about it, where the feelings are coming from, where the other person's stance has come from. You know, if I'm super relaxed about sleepovers, because sleepovers don't mean anything to me, but he feels like sleepovers are much more meaningful. It's much more intimate. It just has more almost like just load, like emotional load around it. Then why do we have different perspectives? What's the experience there? And how do we kind of, I guess, connect or bridge the gap? So yeah, it's just an opportunity to do more work. I think a rule might be a way to just feel safe when you're feeling scared. So we haven't really had a lot of rules. So asking us, you know, how have the rules changed? I know a lot of couples have heard a lot of stories where people had a lot of rules and then dropped off a ton because it was unrealistic. It wasn't practical. It didn't make sense. It wasn't something that applied for the entirety of their relationship. It might have made sense for the first 2 weeks or the first month. And then it was like, this is ridiculous. So rules have changed when people have had a lot of rules at the beginning. Or the other way around, people have had no rules and then have had to actually bring stuff in as they've figured it out. And realize, hey, we actually do need to do a check-in before we go on a date. Hey, we actually do need to talk openly about this stuff a little bit more. And I actually do need to know this. So yeah, just figuring it out as you go and not being too rigid has kind of been the best thing for us. And I think is probably the reason why there haven't been a lot of changes, just some small things. So yeah, I'm sure there will be some more changes that come up. But again, it will probably just be discussed. Okay. Should I do the anal part? I feel like I should. Let's do the low libido and then I'll do the anal question. So I had so many questions about low libido. Someone said, what do you do in a sexless marriage? Someone said, I have low libido, partner is high. How do I satisfy his needs while also satisfying mine? Someone said, my wife and I are never intimate anymore. And then they also said, I just finished going through cancer treatments. I felt like that was an interesting combination of sentences. My wife and I are never intimate anymore. I just finished going through cancer treatment. Are those meant to be related? Is that an explanation for why you're not intimate anymore? Do you deserve more intimacy and you're struggling that you're not getting intimacy? Like, I'm just intrigued at how you've connected those two things when I would almost view them as two separate things. Another question saying, relationship has turned sexless despite plenty of effort. Where to from here? I feel like I'm never in the mood for sex with my boyfriend of almost 7 years. Is something wrong with me? How to get yourself back to feeling sexy in bed after weight gain? That might not be to do with low libido, but obviously a lot of questions around libido. Now, the thing that I always think about when I hear people who are like, hey, I'm really high libido, my partner is really low libido, or I'm really low libido and my partner really wants a lot of sex, he's really or she's really high libido, what do I do? I'm always like, well, I do have one suggestion, and it's non-monogamy, because the high libido person can fuck other people and get that need met elsewhere. And the low libido person doesn't have to have sex. It's perfect. It's like the ultimate solution. Both people get exactly what they want. The problem is the low libido person typically is not secure enough within themselves to deal with their partner sleeping with other people. That's the block. Especially if the high libido person is the one that wants to bring it up. Like, hey, I want to go and sleep with other people to deal with this issue. And the low libido person has like been taking hit after hit because they just can't deal with the sex thing. And then their partner's like, okay, no worries. I'll just go fuck someone else. And they're like, oh my God. So it's interesting. The sex drive discrepancy thing is really tough. And I think everybody is dealing with it. I've already had 5 questions here about it. I read about it all the time on things like Reddit. People talk about it on all of the sexual coaching platforms that I follow. It's such a common question or topic to be discussed because it is a common thing to experience in relationships. It is rare that two people will be perfectly matched in terms of desire for sex or sexual frequency, like wanting it at the same time, the same rate. So at some point or another, you actually have to have this discussion. And whether at the point where you're already experiencing the consequences of being mismatched, or your early days, or you're single and you actually don't know where each other are at, you're kind of going to have to figure out like, hey, what is your ideal frequency? How often do you enjoy having sex? Do you go through phases of not wanting sex? What is the cause? Do you know what the cause is? And what are the things that you do to make yourself feel sexier, want sex more, desire it more? What are those things? And hopefully you can actually answer those questions. I think that would be step one. And this is very basic. So for some of those people who said, I've done everything, like I've tried everything and put in a ton of effort, now what? This might be too basic for you. But I think that you should know how often you would like to have sex at like the higher end, how often you would be happy, but at the lower end. So it's like, what's the highest rate of sex that you would totally love to have in your dream world? And then what's the minimum amount that you need to get by? I think those two numbers are probably important because the ideal amount for a high libido person could be all that they're focusing on. And they actually haven't considered what's the minimum effective dose? What's the amount that is enough for them to feel good, to feel satisfied, and also like kind of match where their partner potentially is at? So knowing what your minimum amount is probably an important number, and it can at least then fluctuate within a range rather than have a hard number. And then I think what's important is to know if you have phases of wanting more or less sex. And if you have a period, you will have these phases. A lot of people experience around ovulation. Some people, for myself, for example, I actually experience it right before I get my period. It's really weird. It's like I can be in the worst mood, but I'm just horny. I also have my biggest orgasms days before my period begins. Super weird. Have no idea why. Potentially there's just more fluid. There's a shift in hormones. I'm more emotional at the time. I'm possibly more sensitive, like your ligaments loosen up. There's just some changes and things happening in the body. It's really weird, but I just have like hella hectic orgasms a couple of days before my period and can have like rolling orgasms. So we'll have like multiple orgasms. I'm trying to remember what like one of my high numbers are. Like in a play session on my own, I think I've done like definitely like close to 10. I'm trying to remember what like the total number of orgasms I've had in one session. I don't know. I remember having like one really big play session just on my own, and I think I had like 6 or 7 orgasms. And then I've played with Greg, and he's made me have, I feel like it might have been 11. But I'm the kind of person where once I orgasm once, it will take me fucking forever. It will take me like 20 or 30 minutes to get one orgasm. But once I get one, I'm very orgasmic. I can be pushed over into another orgasm multiple times very easily. So it's like he'll get me to one, which will take a while, but then I can have like a couple of seconds break and he'll go again, or he won't even stop, which I tend to find those are the more intense ones, and I can't keep going when it's like that. But if you have a quick break and then you go again, like I can orgasm again and again, which is really nice, because honestly, it's like it can be very challenging that I take so long to get the first one. But it's nice that once I am there, I'm good to fucking rock and roll for a while. So yeah, I think, you know, for anyone listening, if you can get your girl to orgasm early on in your play session or orgasm first, that only means good things for afterwards, because she will keep going and be potentially much more aroused and potentially more orgasmic. So get your girl to come first. Fuck, what was I talking about? Okay, so the libido, the low libido, high libido thing. So know if you have phases of low or high libido. And then like I was talking about with your period, know why. Is it your period? Is it stress? Is it being tired? Is it not exercising? Is it your diet? Is it drinking alcohol? Is it because you're sick? Is it because of medication? What is it? What is the cause of your low libido or phases of low libido? And what that will give you is also the solution. So for men, if you know that when you're really stressed out with work, you aren't waking up with morning wood, you're not feeling like having sex as often, just the idea of the effort is really low and you're just simply not as horny, it's because you're stressed, right? What's required in order for you to resolve that is to remove some of the stress. And if you cannot remove the stress, you need to put counterproductive or counter stress actions into your life. So you might need to start doing some yoga instead of going to the gym. You might need to start doing some journaling and talk about what the stress is that you're dealing with. You could fucking need to go to therapy to deal with that. You know, like you need to be putting in some countermeasures. That was the word I was looking for, countermeasures for the stress that you're dealing, because the stress is interfering with your libido. So if you can know what causes your low libido, then you will often know what needs to be adjusted or dealt with in order to get back to normal libido. And then the other side of that is, when do you have a high libido? What causes you to feel more horny? And what are the things that typically make you feel like that? It could be watching a movie that has a sex scene. Could be watching porn. I know for me, whenever I do shopping for like lingerie and I'm just like scrolling through like pages and pages and pages of images of women in underwear that I'm looking at, I'm checking out and I'm imagining on myself and I'm imagining wearing for Greg or whatever, or dressing up for a party. It's like that turns me on and I get really excited about the thoughts of that, the prospect of it. So shopping for lingerie or shopping for sex toys, I really like that. Even just sometimes seeing my sex toys, like if they're by the bed or fucking my doxy was just on the kitchen bench being charged the other day. It's like that will often trigger enough of me to make me feel a little like, ooh. Or things like kissing your partner, things like time of day even. I know I'm always way more keen during the middle of the day. The mornings, I'm not as much. It takes me a while to kind of like connect and feel I just have to feel in my body. It's super important for me to be really connected with the person and feel in my body. And in the mornings, it just takes me longer to get to that point. The evenings I can, but it just depends on Greg. Like Greg is not, I need to go to bed at this time kind of person. So it's like nighttime sex is not the best. So we actually do our greatest work in the middle of the day. luckily we both work from home. But that could be something that you need to be aware of. Like, hey, when are you highest? Is it morning, middle of the day, or nighttime? Are you distracted at certain times of the day? Is that interfering? Like, what is it? And how do you take these moments that you are feeling more horny and replicate them? And find ways to cultivate desire, essentially. I guess that's an important thing to think about. So you can think about the things that create low libido as your breaks, and the things that create high libido as your accelerators. And I'm 100% stealing this from Emily Nagoski, who's the author of Come As You Are. So your breaks are the things that you want to remove in order for you to experience the sex drive that you want. And then your accelerator are the things that will help you get to your sex drive or even surpass it and become even more aroused or feel more horny through different phases or periods. What can often happen is the brakes can be on at the same time as the accelerator. So you might be trying to get really horny, but you're not going to get there because the brakes are still on. There's still fucking laundry to be done. The kids are fucking running around. You're really tired because you had a late night and watching TV, whatever it may be. You're disconnected from your partner because you guys haven't kissed all day. Like, you know, little things like that can often be the brakes. So it's not until you've removed some of those brakes that you can actually enjoy the sexual arousal, desire, libido thing that you want. And then in the same way that I think there was a thing where someone's like, they're all accelerator, no brakes, and someone's just like high libido. I don't know if that's really us. I'm trying to figure out how that's a problem. I don't think it is. But there were instances where people had extremely high libidos to the point that it was actually interfering with their lives and it was becoming an issue. So maybe that's more about what it is. Anyway, identify what your brakes are and what your accelerators are and use them to your advantage. Take advantage of them. Manipulate your libido with that. I think our libido is something that we can construct and train and condition to a degree. We just have to bring in the right stimulation in a way. Stimulation. No pun intended. And then the other thing that I'll say is the effort thing. So someone said, hey, we've been putting in a whole lot of effort. There's two people that are involved here and two different wants, needs, and desires, two different sets of wants, needs, and desires. And one person's wants, needs, and desires may not be being met. Therefore, their desire for that sex is probably going to be low, understandably, right? It's not sex that's enjoyable for them. So what you have to kind of get clear on is, what does your partner really need? What do they really want? What do they like? If they could describe the perfect evening that was whatever was needed before sex or after sex, what would it look like? Can they walk you through that? Is it coming home after work? All of the house has been cleaned, the laundry has been done, everything is spotless, the kids' toys are away, no one's at home, there's a babysitter or kids are at grandma's. You come home to a massage or to a bathtub filled with water and you just hop straight in and there's music playing and you passed a glass of wine. And then, you know, whatever happens, there's some massaging or touching and just taunting and teasing, and there's some toys and there's some stimulation and there's holding back and touching just a little bit, and then just like extending that build up out, and then that leads into more hands and mouths, and then only then do you start to get to the point where you're ready for penetration, and then penetration happens, and then done. So it's like, you know, that's quite a long journey. And if the sex that you're having is, I make out with you for a while, I grab your tits, and then I try and stick my cock in your pussy, that might not really be doing it for someone. So understanding what's their like dream sex look like, and almost the same way that we were talking about, hey, what's your ultimate frequency of sex versus what's your minimum amount? You may need to have both. You may need to have a range. Like, what's your ultimate night of sex? What's your ultimate sex night or sex date? And then what's your minimum effective dose? What's the minimum amount that you need to really enjoy it, but for it to be the mini version of it, you know, like a shorter version? And just have an understanding of like what they want. Like, so something that's interesting for me is, like I said, it takes me fucking ages to have my first orgasm. And then on top of that, I don't really like oral. And I won't say I don't like it. I like oral. I do not come from oral. So fingers don't make me come. I can make myself come with my fingers. but I'm usually like watching porn or like fantasizing. So it's something that like I can kind of train myself to do, but it just, it's something that I don't worry about because it's very high effort and it's okay to not do the really high effort things all the time. So I don't come from oral. I don't come from fingers. I don't come from penetration alone. So I have to have some form of penetration and clit stimulation. It's the only way I can come. So oral sex for me, as enjoyable as it is, if a guy is trying to make me come from oral, and which I usually try to tell every guy I hook up with, like, hey, I don't come from oral. Sometimes a guy will like go to town eating me out to try and make me come and like hang out there for ages. And I'm like, hey, I'm really disengaging right now. Like it's really fun and awesome and I like it, but I'm up here just like moaning and I'm kind of done. Like you're not getting me to go any further. You're not getting me more aroused. It's just part of the overall experience and I want some of it, but it's not the main event. So please move on. Please come back up here. Like I am more aroused and excited when you're actually making out with me. Like I enjoy really deep kissing, like a deep makeout session with hands and fingers exploring the body or playing with the clit or the cock, whatever. I'm more turned on with that and get more aroused with that than I do with someone eating my pussy out. I even think my boobs are more sensitive than, like, I find someone's mouth on my tits way more exciting and arousing than someone eating my pussy out and mouth on my, I take that statement back. But here's the thing, everybody is different, right? Like what everybody needs is totally different. And if you assume that what you want is what your partner wants, you're starting on the back foot immediately. So get really clear on what they want. Even if you've been together for fucking 7 years, things change. People become different versions of themselves. People find out different things about themselves. People want different things. And even if they don't know what they want to try different things and they want to do stuff that is not the thing they've always done. Right. So I think it's important that you ask the question and have the conversation like, hey, is there anything that you want to try? Is there anything new? Have you seen anything on porn? Is there anything that your friends have talked about that you would want to try? Like, is there anything to bring in? Like, I remember even showing Greg a video on fucking Instagram or something where it was like this guy talking about how he eats pussy. And I was like, hey, do you do this? And he was like, oh, yeah, I do that. I'll do more of it. And I'm like, amazing. Thank you. So it's like trying to find out what someone wants and needs, that's not a one-off conversation. It's an ongoing conversation that can be challenging because it's hard to describe things. Sometimes you have to show, sometimes you have to do it to yourself and have your partner watch. Sometimes you don't know exactly what it is. So you take a couple of weeks to figure that out and then you've got some more information. So that conversation has to be ongoing, what your needs, wants, and desires are. Because the reality is you're not going to want sex that you don't enjoy, right? I said that before. If you don't like the sex you're having, why would you want it? So I think a lot of people can often confuse low libido for not wanting sex because they don't like the sex that's available. So I think it's really important to get really honest about that and for men and women to ask for different things and ask to explore and ask to experiment and try things and for different sensations, different types of touch, different contexts or circumstances within which they play together. Because I think if it is like the, hey, we make out for a second late at night, right before we go to bed, and then I try to fuck you, like that's not really enjoyable the guy's going to come, but like if that's what you think is the gold standard of good sex, then you're in trouble, my friend. A guy can have a way better experience as well. And so I think for women, the flip side of this is if you think that if you just like let some dude fuck you and then come, like everything is good in the world, that's not it. Like guys have wants, needs, and desires as well. And they want to indulge in the experience of like clashing bodies, right? And like coming together. And that for men is one of the few moments they get to be physically intimate with someone. Women are physically intimate in many other areas of their lives with other relationships that they have. Men are not. And so I think women get often hung up on the fact that men want sex. But if you can understand that men don't get physical connection elsewhere in their life, they don't fucking hug their friends. They don't kiss their mates on the cheek. They don't get together when they're watching movies and cuddle. Like they don't have that physical connection. There is a fucking barrier around them, between them and any other person except for their partner that they have chosen to have sex with. Excuse me. So to be angry that a guy wants to have sex with you, your partner wants to have sex with you frequently, to be upset about that, all they want is sex, is to miss the fact that if they need physical connection with you desperately, quite frequently, it's because they're not getting it anywhere else and they need you to help fulfill that, because that's one of their wants, needs, and desires. It's just another want, need, or desire. They need physical connection. And I know that we don't always have the language for it. You know, a guy's just like constantly hitting on a girl, or like hitting on his partner, I should say, and like grabbing her tits at the wrong time, or like grabbing her ass, and it feels disrespectful and it feels rude and there's that mismatch, and it can just be like, you can just kind of butt heads. I know that sometimes that can happen, but if you can look past the superficial events that are going on and have a deeper investigation into the meaning behind it, or the desire, or the need. Like the need is, it's one of my favorite words. What is the deeper need? If you can figure that out, and oftentimes it's not what you first think it is. So someone who is initiating sex in a joking manner, like grabbing your boobs, and you fucking hate it. Like I've read about this on Reddit so many times where it's like, my partner just like grabs my boobs and it's so annoying. But for him, it's like, as much as that might not be the best way for him to go about it to actually meet your needs, it might be the only way that they know to engage, and how they know to initiate, and how they know to like connect with you in a playful way. And while the way they're doing it is something that could change, you won't know that until you figure out why he's doing it in the first place, what the deeper need is. If he needs to connect with you in a playful way that is sexual, then you need to go and find some other ways that he can do that, because right now all he knows, all his like fucking inner child knows, is to like honk your tits. So why don't you guys brainstorm and come up with some other ways that he can do that? Maybe when he's walking past you in the kitchen, he can put his hand around your waist, or slide it up your thigh, or grab around your neck and bring your face in towards him and kiss you deeply. That's fucking hot. And it's accomplishing the same thing. So maybe that's what it needs to be. There needs to be a discussion around what physical play looks like, not just penetration, but play and connection and coming together. The last thing I'll say, I'm going to wrap it up soon, is foreplay begins as soon as sex ends. I love that. I love that saying. I love that quote. I wish I knew who said it. Foreplay begins the moment, the second that sex ends. So when you've finished a session with your partner, that's when foreplay begins. That's when a kiss, a touch, a text message, a dirty look, checking your partner out, you can start doing all of those things, and you can indulge in your partner's body and just be filthy and be a fucking pervert. And it's great. It's so fun. And the more that you can have that simultaneously kind of playing alongside of your serious self, you know, the serious part of your relationship, that's the adult that has all the responsibilities, that's trying to function in this world and make money and put food on the table and pay rent, whatever. At the same time, if you can be playful and slutty together and have internal jokes and make out randomly in the kitchen, or, you know, when you walk past each other in the hallway, those kinds of moments are by no means small. They might be seemingly insignificant, but when you put them all together and you see the buildup that you create and the physical connection and the opportunities that are there for you to come together, that is the basis of your relationship. That's how your relationship exists in the world. If you're only coming together at the moment that you're trying to fuck, it's like a plant that's never been watered. You know, it's like, it's missing this vitality or this excitement or these, it's just opportunities, really. I don't need any fucking fancy words or analogies or to start talking about goddamn plants. It's just, opportunities that are there, that are available to everybody in every relationship. And if you can find them, if you can seek them out, even if it's as simple as you don't see each other a lot, but every time before you leave the house to go to work, you have a proper goodbye kiss. Like you have a proper departure and it's an event and you look forward to it, and you find your partner and you fucking hug them, you pull them close, you make out with them, you look them in the eyes, you tell them how much they mean to you and something special that they did the night before, and you tell them that you love them. Like it could be 2 minutes and you can do that. And that could be the thing that starts to light the fire. And then by the end of the day, it's a fucking burning fire pit. And you guys come together after you've both been at work all day and you're excited to see each other because you can reconnect finally after that incredible departure that you had this moment, that coming together that you had. And then who knows what's going to happen, but I feel like it might be good. That's all I'm going to say. The stuff outside of sex is really important. I think that there's a lot of complexity to this. I think that things like people's insecurity, people's past trauma, past experiences, any kind of sexual harassment, any kind of abuse in previous relationships really impacts how people operate in new relationships. And there will be many instances where people will need therapy to work through that. So this might seem like a simple answer. And the reason is it is. It's a simple answer. It's something that is potentially the tip of an iceberg. So don't judge someone based on having low or high desire for sex. I think it's important that you both have your needs met and you do it in a way that is smart and safe and responsible and considerate of who you are as people and the experiences that you've been through. So it may not be something that's resolved without going to therapy, without trying something different. So I hope that helps. I hope that gives you some stuff to mull over and chew on and maybe bring into your life. I know that what I kind of talked about was just how to connect and how to come together and how to enjoy being with each other and how to enjoy having sex. So I'm probably more speaking to like people that are low libido or high libido partners that have low libido partners and what to do. I know that there are many, you know, nuanced versions of that. So I'm sorry if I didn't speak exactly to what your scenario is. And I know that, you know, there's a lot of low libido partners that really just don't have any desire for sex. And they just don't want it. And that's cool. That's okay. That may be the instance where the work that you need to do is the work in overcoming any insecurities or conditioning that you have around being strictly monogamous. What may work and help your relationship function really well is for your partner to be able to go and sleep with other people. And what I've seen also happen in that instance is when they do that, the low libido partner suddenly is ignited and suddenly has this desire for sex again. So you just don't know what could happen. I think what's important is that you do something, right? Like take action. And then whatever the results are from that will teach you what you needed to know about where you were at and how that thing that you did helped you or didn't help you. And then you move on to the next thing. But the more that you just sit there and worry and feel agitated or feel frustrated, the more you're just going to end up stuck there. Like you're not doing anything, right? So I just really advise you to try something, anything, reconnect, disconnect, let your partner go and fuck someone else. You go fuck someone else, be non-monogamous, whatever, like just try something, go and speak to a therapist, like something, and see what you can learn about yourself through it. I guess that's probably, if you can be motivated by anything, it should hopefully be that you can figure some shit out about yourself. And it will ultimately be valuable work that benefits you, even if you don't find the solution within a couple months, which you probably won't. You know, like someone said, I've been with my partner for 7 years. Like you might have multiple years of feeling like you have no sexual desire or no desire for sex with that person. It's probably going to take a while to come out of that. 10 miles in, 10 miles out, right? So that's a quick like little note on today's episode. I'm going to save the anal one for a whole nother episode. I'm going to do an interview with one of my clients, which is going to be really cool. It's going to be another nutrition focused episode next time. She's been on a journey and I'm really excited to talk with her. And then I'll record another one about butt stuff. Oh yeah. It will be epic. It will be awesome. I know that everybody's intrigued by it. I think people are more and more open to it. I know a lot of guys are open to it. I did have another question about pegging as well. So I'll totally talk about pegging. I fucking love pegging. It is the best. I have like this objective to go to a swingers party with a strap on. I have a really pretty baby blue strap on with a matching baby blue Honeybird It set. I even have the cuffs and the collar that's matching baby blue. And I really want to go to OSS and see how many guys I can fuck with my strap on or girls, anyone. But it's just so fun. Pegging people is, I don't know what it is. It's like having a dick, right? I imagine this is what it's like having a dick. And it is so, so fun. It's also when you have a guy who's open to it and likes to play with it, it is intense. And it is really cool to witness and watch and be a part of. Isn't it so wholesome? All right. Love you guys. I will see you on the next episode.